What's going on, everybody? Welcome into the Lakers Outsiders podcast. We got a weekend of games to recap, and man, we had a doozy tonight, but we'll get to that in a little bit. I am Gary Kester. I am joined today by Hani Amadi. And Hani, I mean, how much were you sweating tonight with that very, very, very narrow win over the Hawks?
I don't know if the thing dripping down my face is sweat or blood from my eyes having to walk out the entire game. That was such an awful game. But fortunately, I can rest easy with two Lakers wins and the Nevada Wolf pack being 2-0 to start the year.
They won in football, too.
Yeah, exactly. We're bowl eligible. We're doing big things up in the old Northern Nevada.
since we're plugging some of our other favorite teams, we're also joined by little Marcus Mariota here, fresh off a butt kicking of the New England Patriots. Just wanted to throw that out there. All right, let's get into this. Lakers pick up back to back wins, 3-0 now in the Tyson Chandler era, and we're going to talk about Tyson in a little bit because he was massive tonight. And the Lakers, just like that, they go from 2-5 to 7-6. They're above 500 for the first time this year. And it's almost like people shouldn't panic over the first seven games of the season, but who am I to judge? So the Lakers, first we're going to talk about their win on Saturday night over the Kings. Hani, you were tweeting the game last night and tonight, actually. So your record's improving. You're looking.
I'm also above 500 for the first time.
You're looking pretty good right now. And on that note, if you like the podcast, as always, you can subscribe to us on YouTube and on iTunes and Podbean. And if you really like the podcast, leave us a review on iTunes. That helps us out tremendously. And like I've mentioned before on the pod, if you're a first-time listener, we will be holding some kind of punishment for the person that has the worst record tweeting the games. Hani's looking better. It was a slow start for Hani, but he's coming on strong. Dylan's in trouble at 0-1, and it might stay at 0-1. But hey, leave your idea for a punishment that we'll have to do on the podcast or on the site in some way, shape, or form, and leave it in an iTunes review, and we will definitely take note of it, and it'll go into consideration at the end of the season. So, all right, this first one, the Lakers go into Sacramento and get a win. Kind of an ugly game offensively, but the Lakers, Hani, I mean, you were there, you were tweeting it. I mean, the defense, it was much improved in that game, and it was great to see.
Yeah, I think Luke said it best after the game. He said any other night they shoot the ball as poorly as they did, they're probably going to lose that game. The Lakers were abysmal, really, offensively. They shot, I believe, 31% from the three-point line. They were 12 of 38. They shot 41% from the field. So they weren't very good offensively, but their defense really helped them out. They held the Kings to 86 points, which is kind of amazing given how the season has gone for most NBA teams in general in terms of scoring the ball, and especially for the Lakers, whose defense hasn't been very good.
And then the pace.
The Kings and the Lakers both in the top three of in the league in pace. A lot of possessions and being able to hold the Kings, albeit on the second night of a back-to-back, to 86 points was a big accomplishment. And I think that was a really big step for them defensively, because if they were going to make the playoffs, if they were going to make any noise in the playoffs, they needed their defense to get a whole lot better and get better quickly. And like Tyson Chandler, like you mentioned, he's a huge part of that, but they were improving even before that. But Chandler definitely just shores up the biggest weakness that they had, which was just not having a center to back up JaVale and having to play a lot of small ball minutes where they were just bleeding points.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the Kings, when you look at their numbers in that game, they're not pretty. I mean, they weren't pretty for the Lakers offensively, but that's where you want to be. You know, you want to play good defense because you're going to have off nights, even shooting the basketball or whatever it is. You could have open shots, and they just sometimes they just don't go in. And that's where you kind of rely on your defense to keep you in the game. And the Lakers, I mean, really kind of coasted for the most of the way, I think, in this game in the second half. They kind of built a nice little cushion. And with this team, every time they get a big lead, I – get immediately nervous that somehow they're going to let a team back in, like we kind of saw with the Hawks tonight. But with the Kings, I mean, they made a little push, but the Lakers really kind of answered and just kind of thwarted that. And yeah, I mean, you look at the numbers from the Kings, 34.8% from the field. That's going to get it done just about every night. You know, if you hold a team to, you know, that level of shooting, 6 of 25 from the 3-point line, only 20 free throws. The Kings only had 11 assists, and the Lakers out rebounded them and had less turnovers, 14 turnovers to 19 for the Kings. So yeah, and defensively, it was really great to see the Lakers finally, you know, defend at a really high level. I mean, I think that's probably easily their best defensive performance of the year, right?
Yeah, best defense and most consistent. They've had flashes where they play really good for a quarter here or there or for a few possessions, but against the Kings, it was pretty much the entire game they were playing really good, solid defense.
Yeah, it was really only two guys that seemed to really be hurting them with De'Aaron Fox and Willie Cauley-Stein. And, you know, I mean, De'Aaron Fox still finishes 8 of 17 after a really hot start. Cauley-Stein was 6 of 14. Buddy Hield going 3 of 17 was huge, which was ironic considering some of you on NBA Twitter think that the Lakers should trade Brandon Ingram for Buddy Hield, but whatever. 3 for 17 for him, and he's been – I mean, he had off to a hot start this year, so that's – I mean, that's great. That's great, you know, to kind of bring the Kings back down, I guess, to a level most people expected them to be, because they've started out the year great. You got to give them a lot of credit. They've kind of exceeded expectations early on here, and they've been hot, and the Lakers really, you know, kind of put out that fire defensively, and that was just great to see. It's great to see that the team played defense and kind of dig deep, because really LeBron was the only one that brought it on the offensive end that played fairly well. You know, he was just launching really like deep threes. It seemed like he kept getting farther and farther out.
It was incredible. It was those threes, which you're right. Every single time he was an extra step back. And then he had the one play where he just like drove into the paint and he was just like kind of half running. He wasn't really at a full sprint. He just like went across the entire paint, threw up a weird hook shot. I don't know what he was trying to do. Playing around.
Plus, we got to see Lance Stephenson playing the air guitar a few times. So,
yeah,
I feel like the games go pretty well when that's happening.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was great to see them play defense the way they did. And, you know, it was like finally we got to see a really, really good defensive performance. Like you said, they had been improving up to that point, but finally, like, they really kind of clamped down defensively, especially for stretches there. You know, it was kind of a game of runs a little bit for a good chunk of the game. But yeah, that was great to see. You know, I felt like probably in the first games of the year, if you would have told me there are going to be games the Lakers score 101 points, I'm like, oh, well, they're going to lose that game because they're going to give up a lot more than that. But, yeah, you know, to hold Sacramento to 86, that's fantastic to see. So hopefully more performances will, you know, more performances like that will come in the future for this team. And, you know, I think one big reason you can, you know, obviously attribute the improved defensive play is the acquisition of Tyson Chandler, which shout out to James Jones, interim Suns GM, for completing the buyout for Chandler and allowing him to sign with the Lakers, because the Lakers are 3-0 ever since they signed Tyson Chandler. And man, he had a massive play that saved the Lakers today with, you know, a 1-point lead in the final seconds. Trae Young gets by Brandon Ingram, gets all the way to the bucket, and he put that ball pretty high. You know, Chandler barely got a fingertip on it and blocked it right at the apex, because I think, you know, if he's even a split second later on that, it's probably on its way down. It's going to be goaltending. So Tyson Chandler definitely saved the Lakers tonight. But I guess on the note of Chandler, I guess what are some of the biggest contributions that you've noticed with him coming aboard?
I mean, defensively, it's just having another bigger body, a guy who can tell other players where to be. And it kind of just eases the pressure on the perimeter players, right? Like,
right,
they don't have to play as tight. They don't have to be gambling to get steals. They don't have to do any of that. They can just funnel their guys to Chandler because they know they have a big guy who can protect the rim. I think you're seeing that with like Josh Hart, who's improved as a perimeter defender these last couple games, is that he doesn't feel like he has to do it too much. And that's huge for the Lakers. And so just having somebody that can erase mistakes that way, kind of basically just play like JaVale. And then the one thing he has over JaVale is that he can step up on screens. JaVale is not that kind of player. He's dropping back on every single one, and that can sometimes lead to the Lakers getting burned outside on the perimeter. But Chandler is a lot better at that. He was really good in that Minnesota game. He kind of saved that game, not only with the offensive rebounds, but he closed out on Derrick Rose at the very end and enough to just bother that shot. And you kind of see little bits of that every single time. Offensively, he's also, you know, useful with screens. And he hasn't really scored a ton of points here. He doesn't look super comfortable with the timing with some of the passers, but creating space for players and just doing, you know, enough to kind of get it a few more efficient shots out there.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. I think defensively, you know, we had talked, you know, for a while, I think really kind of since the start of the season, that the Lakers, when they had a traditional center on the floor, I mean, basically when they had JaVale on the floor, they were a pretty good defensive team in terms of when you compare them with teams across the league, right? I think their defensive efficiency was, I want to say, like top 10 at that point, at one point when we were kind of discussing it. But, you know, and now when you have, you know, another player that's similar to McGee, JaVale. We are referring to him as JaVale. He is first name basis. I'm not gonna even be proper here. JaVale. with Tyson Chandler holding down that second unit, bringing a kind of a similar skill set, you know, that, like you said, you know, doesn't allow, or, you know, it makes it so that the perimeter defenders aren't pressing. Because I feel like Josh Hart was pressing a little bit, you know, kind of almost gambling, thinking he's got to make a play because they're playing small. You know, there's not really rim protection behind him. And now that's not the case. You know, I think they understand that, you know, if they get beat, they've got that help behind them. And, you know, it's not only that Tyson Chandler is a good shot blocker and rebounder, you know, it's just the fact that he's a high IQ player. And especially on the offensive end, I think that, you know, one thing that everybody kind of overlooked was his ability to set screens both on and away from the basketball. Yeah. You know, I think Josh Hart might be the best, you know, the most or the biggest beneficiary from Tyson Chandler's addition to the offense, because I mean, Hart has been lights out from three this year, and Chandler set some great screens for him to get him open. I think there was a couple that he set today that I noticed and gave Hart plenty of time to catch square and have a clean look at the basket. So, you know, just all the little things that Chandler brings, like those are the type of role players that you definitely need. And the Lakers needed it in the worst way at that particular position, you know, to help them defensively on the glass and to set those screens, man. I mean, you know, a lot of, you know, good offensive teams have players that make plays that don't show up in the box score. And Chandler is definitely one of those guys. Cause if you look at his stat line tonight, you know, you don't really look at that as like, you know, a huge impact, but I mean, he saved him and you know, he's been awesome. He's been awesome, which shout out to Suns Twitter or NBA Twitter. Again, it's okay to admit you guys were wrong. It's okay to admit that you thought Tyson Chandler was done and he wasn't going to help the Lakers, but he is. And, you know, I brought up the point when he was with the Suns this year and everybody's like, oh, he hasn't been good with the Suns this year. And it's like, you know, there was the report from Wojnarowski that they had been working on a buyout for a while. It's like, yeah, if I put in my 2 weeks at a job, you're not getting my best performance in those 2 weeks. Like, I'm pretty much checked out and I'm coasting to the finish line. And I almost feel like that's what was happening with Chandler and, you know, playing for his hometown team, you know, with the Lakers coming back home to the LA area and playing for a team that has playoff aspirations, you know, that has hopes of making, you know, making some noise in April or May. You know, I think that has kind of revitalized him a little bit and given him, you know, almost some purpose, I guess. And, you know, because he's a guy, he's an NBA champion. You know, people forget that about Chandler. Like, he was a huge part of that 2011 Mavs team that made an improbable run to, you know, not only upset the Lakers, but then the Heat in the finals. So, and LeBron seems to love him. You know, LeBron has been very complimentary of him, and he gave him a big hug tonight after that block, because I know LeBron was not happy that he missed those two free throws, even though he got it back on a putback dunk immediately after, which on that play, I want to shout out Kyle Kuzma. I said this on Twitter, but man, I mean, nobody seems to be really talking about it that much. Yeah. That was a fantastic play for him to crash the offensive glass, and then get the loose ball after, because he didn't get it right away. I mean, he missed the floater, but it bounced, you know, on the opposite side of the rim, and LeBron had to put back dunk. Yeah. I mean, those are the types of plays that you have to have, right? You know, to, I mean, even win against bad teams, like, you just got to have those winning type plays.
Yeah, and he was big on the glass all night, which is something that he's actually, it's like legitimately not a strength of his. But he had 8 rebounds tonight. 4 of them were offensive. So, you know, pretty big stuff from Kuzma. He was a really big part of this one.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to see, really, the thing with Kuzma is I want to see the 3-point shot start to drop, you know, more along the rate that we saw last year. You know, tonight he was 1 of 6 from the 3-point line. 8 of 18 overall. It's not bad. 18 points. 8 rebounds tonight. So, I mean, Chandler's been just awesome. Been such a, you know, great addition that has fit in so well. And I guess I'm just kind of surprised, I guess, that he's fit in, you know, this quickly. But he is a veteran. You know, I think he's just perfect for that second unit, and just does all the dirty work and all the little things that really, really help this team. So, another thing I wanted to talk about was Lonzo Ball. Been kind of a hot topic lately because he hasn't been finishing games, and people are upset that Rondo's finishing ahead of him, and they're upset at Luke Walton. Basically, I mean, Luke Walton, according to a lot of people, cannot do anything right, which I think me and you are both in agreement that, you know, Luke gets blamed for things that are kind of out of his control. I think some of the sloppy play today, you know, was just the players. It's just a lack of execution, and you can't just blame the coach for all of that. How did you feel about Luke Walton today? We talked about a little bit before we went on that. I think we both agree that there were some good and some bad. I mean, just what were some things you noticed with him? Good or bad?
So this is a thing that happens with like every basketball discussion on Twitter, and we always go back to Twitter because that's where we kind of see a lot of this stuff. But with a lot of things, and especially with Luke Walton this season, nuance is kind of hard to come by.
What is that?
It's a pretty big word, I understand, but basically, like, what I'm trying to say is you can criticize Luke for a lot of decisions. There's a lot of things that I think both you and I have issues with. Namely, like, for example, in this game, we were talking about it before we got on, that he left that bench unit in the game a little bit too long when they were giving up that 15-point lead. Mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of Rondo and Lance playing together so much. I'm not a big fan of Lance playing so much in general. I think he should stagger Ingram and LeBron. But at the same time, there's some things where, like, people just – I feel like everybody thinks they can be a better coach than a dude who was an NBA coach and won, like, 24 straight with the Warriors or whatever it was. The things with Lonzo, like, tonight I thought Lonzo should have finished the game because I think he was one of the better players. He was playing really well tonight. He looked engaged. I thought it would have been good to reward him with that. But the reasoning that Luke made after the game also made sense to me. They put in heart because they wanted to play a little bit more switch heavy. They were giving up a lot of points, especially on screens. And Hart had been playing really good defensively tonight. On top of that, I don't think he mentioned this, but I think Hart gives them more spacing. He at least has more gravity because people don't necessarily give a whole lot of respect to Lonzo's three-point shooting because it's so up and down. And one of the big issues this Lakers team has is late game offense, and a huge part of that is they throw the ball to LeBron and there's no movement and no spacing, and he has to drive against the defense that's 5 players in the paint. So because of that, like, I understand why Luke made that decision. I'm not sure how I feel about the decision making, but I also think that Hart was a huge part of them winning this game. And I think, you know, it's important to look at the process over the results, but when you're in the Western Conference and you're a team that's in the playoff hunt and every single game matters, the results also matter. And, you know, Luke got sort of vindicated today. I want Lonzo to play more in the fourth quarter, but a lot of that is also on him and how he plays. So hopefully this is something that, you know, Lonzo's confidence is going to be a little bit higher after this game because he played so well. Luke gave him a whole lot of praise in the post-game conference, said he was playing really well and he was considering closing out with him. He just made that decision because of the defense. Mm-hmm. But I'm hoping that it's a good step forward, because I think for this team to be really successful, they need Lonzo to be really good, and they need him to be on the court late in game, because he should be their most the most trustworthy option at that position. But right now, these past few games, he hasn't been, other than tonight.
Yeah, and it's just important to remember. I mean, we're what, 13 games into Lonzo's second year, and he missed a good chunk of last year. So, like, it's – and I've seen people compare it to Byron Scott and how he handled D'Angelo Russell and some of the other young players, or Jordan Clarkson, his rookie year. And, it's just – I don't think it's fair to compare the situations. Byron Scott had Kobe Bryant, who was 36 and 37 years old or whatever, on his last leg, like quite literally. And I mean, they were a lottery team. Like, they were a bottom three team, I think, what, both years, or bottom four. Right. And, I mean, the circumstances are so different. Like, the Lakers have LeBron James. I mean, he's not really in his prime anymore, but he's still really good, and you still expect to make the playoffs. So wins and losses matter, greatly, especially to Luke Walton, a guy that has been rumored to be kind of on the hot seat. Like, when you're on that, like, you got to win games, and, it's almost, you want to, in a perfect world, you get development and you get wins, but sometimes you got to sacrifice one for the other. And he's in no position to sacrifice wins for development at this point. And I mean, you look at the minutes distribution, Lonzo still played 27 minutes to Rondo's 16, So, I mean, that was better in that regard. Yeah. I would have liked to see Lonzo close the game out, but I also, like you said, I understand the reasoning for Hart being in there and for the defensive purposes and to get another shooter out there. I mean, Hart's been the Lakers' best three-point shooter, most reliable. I mean, he's been a damn sniper from the three-point line so far this year. And, to have that out there with a guy like LeBron to try and provide him some more spacing, or Ingram, curling, or Kuzma cutting, whatever. That's important to have him out there in those moments. And, one thing I think Luke deserves a ton of credit for tonight is the last like 4 or 5 minutes, he swapped BI, Brandon Ingram, onto Trae Young, who was just torching the Lakers in the fourth quarter, hit a couple really deep threes. And so the Lakers put Brandon Ingram on him and, decided to put length against him, and that really bothered him. That kind of changed the game from that point. The Lakers were starting to get stops. They were getting out in transition. They got some looks. And, I think that move was brilliant, honestly. And, nobody wants to give him credit for it. Like you said, I think he rode with the bench unit too long in the fourth quarter, and the rotations haven't been great. The lineups have to be better, but I also don't put that entirely on Luke Walton. I think at a certain point we have to hold these assistant coaches accountable too, because, that's why they're there. You can't expect the head coach to just, be completely cognizant of everything, right? At what point do we hold the assistant coaches accountable? Why isn't one of them kind of tracking minutes and saying, hey, we've had this guy out here for this long, maybe we need to get him a breather or whatever. I think it needs to go on the entire coaching staff. But of course, I mean, it's fair that Luke is going to receive the blame because he does make those decisions. And that has to be better. I'm not giving Luke Walton a pass. I think he's far from a perfect coach, but I also think you could be doing far worse than Luke Walton, the head coach. Yeah. So, things have to be better, but, what is this? Luke is still a young head coach too. I mean, he's still kind of picking things up as he goes, and the Lakers are trying to install kind of new plays and new sets and things like that. And yeah, I mean, the Lakers have to late game situations. I think a lot of times they let teams back in is because they let their foot off the gas because they go to ISO ball and they just give the ball to LeBron. They all stand and watch. And I think tonight, even Ingram, I think, did it a couple times. The Lakers just, they kind of catch the ball and they just stand there. Yeah. Even the guy with the ball is just sitting there. It's like, let's dribble with a purpose, right? I noticed that in the first half that led to a lot of turnovers because they're getting late in the clock and things like that. Don't just dribble just to dribble. You gotta move. You gotta dribble to get a better angle on a pass, to attack the basket, whatever. You gotta dribble with a purpose. And I mean, the whole offense has to just have more flow, more movement, especially away from the basketball. So those things have to improve, but hey, I said this after the game, and I don't know necessarily if you could call the Lakers a good team right now, but good teams find ways to win games and bad teams find ways to lose them. The Hawks are a bad team and they found a way to lose it, But the Lakers have found ways to win games, you know, ever since they were 2-5. And, you know, all of a sudden they're what, 5-1 ever since? And get to 7-6. Quick math.
Yeah.
I got my math genius to check my math. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think Luke Walton is far from the perfect head coach. You know, he has a lot of things. I mean, he has some pretty noticeable flaws, and it's frustrating at times. But man, you guys got to, I just feel like people got to stop blaming him for everything, because at a certain point, players have to be held accountable. I mean, am I like crazy to think that, or
like, no, absolutely not. I mean, like you said, the late game stuff, I find it very difficult to believe that Luke is telling four guys to just stand still and then LeBron to pound the ball until he finds a shot. Like, some of that is on the players. They got to, you know, be cutting. They got to. And the weird thing is they do it pretty well for three quarters, right? Like, Kuzma was cutting like crazy all game, and he got a bunch of passes from LeBron tonight and finished them. Yeah. Ingram early on this year especially was really good at cutting off of LeBron and getting some easy buckets. But when it gets to fourth quarter crunch time, and I think it's understandable because it's a young team playing with the biggest superstar in the world, that they just caught a ball watch. And that's something that has to change. And yes, like, Luke should be imposing his will on them, but also, you know, he's not out on the court, you know, watching the ball.
It's a good thing, because Luke would be a terrible defender at this point of his life.
So basketball, though. They wanted more playmakers around LeBron. and I think the other thing you got to give credit to Luke for is that he is a very fluid coach. He changes what he does. He was relying on Lance Stephenson a lot earlier on in the year, and then he was kind of out of the rotation for a minute almost. He played a little bit too much tonight, but he's not really relying on him as much as he did. As soon as they got him a backup center, they have played no quote unquote small ball with no centers. They still play small and they play fast, but they're doing it with a center on the court at all times. And
That's
done wonders for their defense. And, you know, you got to give him credit for being able to change what he's been comfortable with or what his gut instinct is, based on what he sees out there. And I think that's really important, because much like the rest of the team, he's still young. Obviously, at this point, you know, wins matter and results matter, but he's working and developing himself as a coach, and he's developing his players pretty well, and he's getting them a few wins, at least, you know, not against the greatest competition, but these are wins that they got to win to get to the playoffs, and they're doing that right now.
Yeah, I mean, if you think, you know, things have been really rough for the Lakers, or you know, you're kind of a pessimist at this point, look at it this way. The Lakers have been far from perfect, and wow, my English is far from perfect too. but you know, had a lot of ups and downs. But they're sitting at eighth in the West right now. Like, if you know the season ended already, the Lakers would be in the playoffs. You know, and a lot of you guys told me that the Lakers were not going to make the playoffs this year. But I'll save that.
A lot of NBA Twitter shoutouts tonight.
I know, seriously. I'm going to keep making this a thing. I might just make this a segment on the podcast where I just basically bring up old tweets.
I'm into it.
And I mean, honestly, the Lakers are only a game out of fourth place in the West right now. So, I mean, they're four games out of first. So, hey, optimism.
We got four games against the Warriors. That's all you need.
Hey, we control our own destiny, man. It's pretty crazy. It's been a long 13 games. There's just been a lot of ups and downs, and I mean, it's fun because the Lakers are winning games and they've got some winnable games coming up. I mean, looking at, you know, their upcoming schedule, get a couple days off, which will be nice. It'll be good for them. You know, this was the second night of a back-to-back. Not that I like to use that as an excuse. I was going to totally use the LA nightlife excuse if the Lakers lost this game, because every time they win at home, it's used for the other team. But the next four games for the Lakers, they play the Blazers at home on Wednesday, and the Blazers have not lost since they lost to the Lakers, in Portland. So they're 4-0, I believe, since then, but they have played all their games at home. So they finally go on the road for, I think, six straight games. And then the Lakers go on the road for three games at Orlando, at Miami, and at Cleveland. So, Big opportunity for the Lakers here. I mean, looking at those four games, what's kind of the record you think they need to go in those four?
I think ideally I would go 3-1. I think most likely it's 2-2. They got to beat Orlando and Cleveland. Those are the two easy ones. Miami is on the second night of a back-to-back. They're not a great team, but they're tough enough that might be an issue.
And it's an early Sunday game.
Yeah. So I think that's a winnable game, but it's going to be one of those funky ones that's you just don't know what's going to happen. Portland is always tough, but it's at home, so they're going to have a chance, and they should have a great deal of confidence after getting a really big win over them in Portland a couple of weeks ago. So
yeah, beating the Blazers for the first time since 1927
current Atlanta Hawk Kent Bazemore was starting for the Lakers.
Shout out to Wesley Johnson.
I think all four of those games are winnable. I think 2-2 should be the baseline, and 3-1 should be kind of that would make it successful to me.
Yeah, I think 2-2 is like the acceptable thing, because you know they're three games on the road, you know, yeah. And like you said, or at Orlando Saturday night, and then at Miami Sunday night. So I guess I don't know how long of a flight that is. I'm sure it's very quick. Lakers, just stay away from those Miami nightclubs on Saturday night, please. That is a 3 p.m. Pacific time Sunday game.
Ron knows the city, dude.
Oh, Miami nightlife undefeated, apparently. Jeez. Okay.
So we didn't talk about this because we didn't have the podcast last night. Did you see the picture of LeBron going into the arena yesterday, in the Kings arena?
Oh, yeah.
In one hand, he's carrying a box that looks like it has donuts in it, and on the other hand, he's carrying a bottle of wine. he's living his best life.
Yeah. I mean, that's my go-to combo before a big game or any kind of big event, donuts and wine.
I do that before every podcast, if you can't tell.
I see what's in that cup that you're drinking out of. Yeah, I think 2-2 is kind of the expectation. I think 3-1 would be nice, and 4-0 would be a bonus, I guess. Yeah. You know, if they could get to 10-6, that'd be awesome, especially because they come back home to play the Jazz, which will be tough. And then the Magic at the Nuggets will be tough. Then they round out the month with the Pacers and Mavs at home, which we've played the Mavs at home once and know that should not or may not be an easy game. So we'll see. But yeah, I mean, things are looking up for this team. You know, they still have a lot of things to correct. And, you know, hopefully this game was kind of almost like a wake-up call to the team that, like, hey, even though you're playing better, you're still not good enough to just show up and just, you know, go through the motions and still beat a team like the Hawks. Right. You know, you still got to play. You still got to execute. And you know, you got to finish teams off when you got a big lead. You know, the most dangerous thing when you're playing against an inferior team like Atlanta is, no disrespect to them, but if you let a team hang around, all of a sudden they start to believe that they can beat you. And beating a team that, you know, starts to really believe is hard to do. So, you know, got to have that. They got to develop that killer instinct, and it starts with the late game execution and maybe stop putting LeBron on the free throw line in clutch moments. It has not worked out so far. Although credit to him, he stuck with the play and got the putback dunk. But yeah, things are looking up. I'm excited to see how this team progresses. I think they'll get better and better as the season goes along. And it's important that they're 7-6. I mean, when they were 2-5, it like, you know, it looked like this team was like, okay, it's going to be an uphill battle to get to like 500 and you know, try and kind of get over that hump and then try and create some separation between the wins and losses. And, you know, they did it pretty quickly. So yeah, it's great to see. So 2 days off for the Lakers, Portland up next. Hopefully Lakers can beat Portland again, start a streak of our own against those guys. Yeah, and go. The Portland media crew or whatever can bring it up every 10 seconds at their home games. But I'm not bitter or anything about the season opener.
This has been the most petty podcast of all time.
Dude, I think this is just going to be my new slant. I'm just going to be petty on every pod. It's going to be the petty pod. Oh, all right. Well, I think that's going to do it for us today. Like I said, recapping this weekend, Lakers are on got a little roll going here. We got a little roll. What did I say? 5 out of 6. So things are looking good. Things are looking good. Shout out to Tyson Chandler. He's been a huge, huge addition. And yeah, hopefully the Lakers can keep it going. So general reminder, like I mentioned at the start of the podcast, if you like the pod, you can subscribe to us on YouTube, Podbean, and on iTunes. And if you subscribe to us on iTunes, please leave us a review. Those reviews do great things for us. They help us out a lot. And we are leaving it in your hands. If you give us a great suggestion in an iTunes review on what the punishment's going to be for the tweeter with the worst record at the end of the season, you know, that's going to be fun. That's going to be fun. And Dylan, I read your comment in the Slack, and I'm sorry, pal. So I don't make the rules. I mean,
you better start tweeting more games, buddy.
Oh, shout out to Dylan. Shout out to Dylan. And I think Grant Goldberg was watching this. I don't know if he's still listening. And I'm sorry, Grant, that I have to do this. But LA teams tonight were 2-0 over the Hawks. Just got to throw that out there. I can be a little cocky because my team beat the Patriots today. So, all right, that's going to do it for us. Like I said, subscribe to the podcast. You can find all of our stuff on LakersOutsiders.com, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that stuff. Hani, this was fun. Good chatting with you again, my man. And we shall be back on Wednesday, hopefully talking about another Laker win to get to 8-6. But I'm sure everybody will have something to complain about, even if that happens. So until that point, for Hani Ahmadian, I'm Gary Kester. Until next time, see you guys later.
Shout out, Kent Baysboy.